You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Brad Smith.
The key is not to create content, unique content for each of those places. The key is to create one really good, deep piece of content that's going to work for your brand and for lead gen and on your site and for SEO, but do it in such a way that you also have video snippets, that you have clever quotes and takeaways, that you have like PDF reports that people can download. So you have all these things kind of built in from the beginning. So that way you're able to simply just repurpose that stuff for all those other places.
Brad is founder and CEO of Codeless, a content production company for the best SaaS sites on the planet. Their articles have been featured in the New York Times, Business Insider, The Next Web, and thousands more. At Codeless, content is not simply created, it is produced, and that makes all the difference. Brad's here to tell us why. Brad, thanks for being on Brand with us.
Thank you, Nick. I'm looking forward to getting started.
So, being someone who listeners know loves to split hairs over word choice, I am fascinated by your bio, which is the hallmark of any well-written bio because it invites you, it sparks that curiosity to learn more. So I'd say that if you're typing content, Google for most is going to fill in that word of content creation. But you talk about producing, content production, making all the difference in the world. Let's split hairs on words a bit. What's the difference there? What's that mean?
Yeah, definitely. So it sounds a lot like semantics, but I think if you kind of peel it back and look at it from a broader picture, there is a subtle difference that I think that needs to be kind of called out. And that's, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when all of this content stuff started, all this SEO stuff started, the world was in a place where we needed more content and there wasn't enough content online. And today it's basically the complete opposite of that. There's way too much content online. Competitors are better. Everyone's more savvy. Even if you look at people outside of like really difficult competitive spaces like SaaS, but if you look at like even local companies and finance companies, and insurance companies and real estate and whatever, everyone's doing the basics pretty much across the board. And so what that means is the old kind of adage of like, just get some random freelance writer to write 500 generic words for you doesn't really cut it today. That's basically useless. So I think it's kind of a different mindset in that the stakes that we're all playing at today is a lot greater. And even the way we do things internally is that we don't work with just writers. We work with account managers and designers and developers, and we'll have teams of people working on, you know, just one piece of content. And so I think that's where kind of the world is going if you just pull back a little bit and look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, where the world's going, but definitely it can be a leap for some to get there, because as most think of content, it is that mindset of I've got to crank out everything and a lot of it, and everything that my competitors make. Oh, well, they've got a video series. Now we have to make a video series and a podcast and all of these different things. And as I'm fond of saying, more isn't always better. Sometimes more is just more. But your school of thought takes that a step further. You talk about not just more being just more, but you say that you can actually get better results with half the content. How am I not being sold snake oil by that one, Brad Smith?
I have a course to sell you after this. No.
Yeah.
Basically, it's you can kind of cheat a little bit if you know where to cheat, if that makes any sense. So, in other words, if you look at like, you know, the problem you just described, I've got to put video on YouTube. I got to put video on a different video on Facebook. I have to put different types of content on LinkedIn. Like, the key is not to create content, unique content for each of those places. The key is to create one really good, deep piece of content that's going to work for your brand and for lead gen and on your site and for SEO, but do it in such a way that you also have video snippets, that you have clever quotes and takeaways, that you have like PDF reports that people can download. So you have all these things kind of built in from the beginning. So that way you're able to simply just repurpose that stuff for all those other places. And you're able to get a lot more mileage out of kind of like the same message and the same kind of deliverable, if you want to think of it that way.
You know, I think that there's a lot of things that kind of sparks in me, but one that you talk about that I think many are guilty of is we think of these pieces of content that we create as sort of singularities, when in actuality, there's so many different things. You mentioned quotes, there's audio, and if there's audio, then there's the text that you can transcribe from that audio. There's so many different things. It's a resource that I'm not sure that we're all mining as efficiently as we could be.
Totally. Yeah. And if you could look at it in kind of a number of directions too, because another example would be that even a podcast like this, obviously it might be slightly difficult. We could still do things like video or bring in kind of takeaways if we mentioned something specific. So you could still kind of do that approach in the very beginning. But even on the back end, like we've taken podcast episodes, taken the best kind of like cherry picked a lot of the best takeaways from a couple different episodes, and then roll those into one kind of guest column for a large publisher or a large site. So there's a number of different ways you can kind of slice and dice the stuff, as long as the stuff that you're doing at the very beginning is of high quality and is done kind of correctly.
So I want to build on the stuff that you were talking about. And I wanted to ask specifically, when you talk about content production, what stuff are you producing a lot of these days, or is it still the same tried and true meat and potatoes formats, or is there growth in a particular form of content?
Yeah, definitely. It's for us, it's still a lot of meat and potatoes, because a lot of our work tends to still have a heavy SEO influence or goal. And so SEO is still largely driven by text. And so we still might do kind of long in-depth articles of, let's say, an average of like 2000 words, roughly. We'll still do a lot of those, but then we're also trying to do a lot more custom design for each piece of, you know, each article we're doing. We'll do more primary research. So we'll do, whether it's our own customer base or our client's customer base or reaching out to different experts, we'll try to get, not just have like a subject matter expert writer, but also like include those quotes and that unique context or nuance from the people who kind of actually know it the best. So primary research, custom images and graphs and charts and all that kind of stuff. Tools. So if we need to do like a simple calculator to illustrate some kind of concept, video for sure, and maybe even like a couple different videos throughout the piece of content, depending on how long it is and how many broad topics we're going to cover. So I guess it's still a lot of meat and potatoes. It's just doing, you know, it's doing meat and potatoes in kind of like a prefix, high concept restaurant type, not meat and potatoes as like the same old kind of diner way.
Right. I'm thinking, to really overextend the metaphor, that we're not, just buying the sack of potatoes at the store, that they are scientifically engineered, high yield, incredibly flavorful. So, you talked about, mostly SEO. And I think when we talk about SEO and content, a lot of times we do think about articles, about blogs. But as video and podcasting continue to capture the imagination of the audience as well as the eyeballs, how can we create better optimized podcast and video content?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. There's a kind of a couple ways to look at it. There is like video SEO. There is a thing called video SEO. There is audio SEO to a lesser degree. Like, so if you think of how do I make this type of content or this podcast rank better for these concepts in Apple, for example, there are ways to do that. But I think, again, let's not look at it just channel by channel, but let's look at it more holistically. It's like, how do we do a better job of layering in these video types where they make more sense. So for some really detailed explanation, maybe you need text because that form serves it better. Whereas to illustrate a concept or to bring in an expert, maybe, you know, that's where an audio works better, or that's where video, or that's where design works better. So I think if you think of it that way, you're able to still kind of target the same overall, like, you know, SEO principles that we've been working on forever. But do understand that that video and SEO and podcast kind of SEO it lags a lot behind where text is and where text algorithms are. I'd still kind of urge people to lead with that and then use those other media types to enhance or add on to kind of the same avenue.
Well, I think that's a good tip. And again, the best advice is sometimes right in front of you and very obvious, but it bears repeating, because I think, especially in marketing and in content marketing, we are drawn to the shiny new things of video and podcasting. And there is a danger in leaving some of these other forms behind. And in doing that, you probably close the door to some significant SEO opportunities.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. So even with, you know, a podcast like this, I would recommend still get the transcripts done, still have a writer or a marketer go through those transcripts to clean them up to make sure they're, you know, legible. and even you could even rewrite sections or add those takeaway spots or frequently asked questions to kind of hit on a lot of those semantic keywords and other ideas that are more classically kind of like SEO 1.0. I think it's still definitely important to do that. And if you think about it too, it's like the hard work in doing a podcast like this is kind of what we're doing now, and all the prep work and post work. Adding on a transcript and getting someone to clean up the transcript might take an extra hour or two. So it's looking for the ways, how can you leverage those little incremental benefits? Cause they don't cost you that much, but they should deliver you over time, a huge benefit comparatively.
Hey, On Brand listeners, we talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories, to building engaged super fans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written 2 books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with 2 A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show. So in looking at content production and external resources, I know there's many out there listening that may think, but you know, I'd send it out to someone, but boy, we really know our widget, our secret sauce, better than anybody else. How do you overcome the kind of internal external struggle?
Definitely, yeah. It's not easy. It's pretty much a constant problem, I would say. Not a problem, but kind of an obstacle to address with pretty much, you know, even every client we deal with, and we've dealt with a lot of big clients who still kind of run into the same problem. I think part of it is understanding, number one, what are you trying to get from an outside team versus an internal team? So in other words, there's just going to be naturally some types of content that an internal team should do, and an external team is easier for them to do. So it's usually easier for an external team to do top of the funnel content, where maybe it's about certain topics in the space or certain areas, but it doesn't have to be as nuanced as like someone's unique point of view on something. Or a case study, some of those content types are going to be best served, you know, just by internal people naturally. But in saying that, a lot of teams or a lot of clients will have the idea of what their content is in mind, like you said. The problem is they don't ever have it written down. And so just committing to a style, a uniform style guide, that kind of goes beyond the basics. So usually if a client does have a style guide before we start working with them, it usually has stuff in there around like commas and M dashes and how they want headings done. And those things are fine, but they usually don't have anything about like, here's how we talk about X, or here's how we think about these problems in our space. And that's the kind of thing that's really difficult for some external team to grasp. So usually what we recommend is that it's kind of an iterative process that we try to set up with internal teams where we want to present, we might do the heavy legwork on identifying keywords, identifying what should be in this piece of content based on kind of what search engines are already looking for. And then we work with the client to then say, okay, help us fill in the gaps now. So we'll drop in the major sections, the major themes, all that kind of stuff. Help now give us feedback before we write it out on, you know, you need maybe think about adding this spin here, or maybe make sure you keep this angle here because it's how we think of things. Believe it or not, too, voice memo files are super helpful. So just getting someone internally to kind of riff on a few ideas and do it in their own natural language. Because that's another hurdle that external people, writers, teams, whatever, will struggle to grasp, is all that kind of intangible gray area stuff that's really difficult to get until you go through that feedback process of, okay, the first few are going to be kind of messy, but we're hoping after whatever the first 5, 10, 15 pieces are the writers and the teams kind of have it down from there.
So I have to go back simply and mention that we've made it some 250 episodes of the On Brand podcast without ever having mentioned an M dash, but not all dashes are created equally. So yeah. I'm totally here for that. I think, you know, you said some interesting things there. First of all, I think of interest especially is that a lot of people think that it's a binary choice. It's an either or as opposed to a both and. And you made the really good point that it depends what the project is, that there may still be some stuff that you keep internally, that it's not that content production no longer exists in-house, but that there are not all projects, especially as teams become more nimble, that need that the internal thinking, that the mind share that takes up is bandwidth that could be deployed elsewhere and isn't always needed in the direct production of content.
Definitely. Yeah, it all comes back to resource allocation at the end of the day. Like, for example, we have different kind of levels or tiers of writers with different price points for that very reason. For the same client, we might use different ones for different reasons. So, for example, if a piece of content is really formulaic, let's say I was just doing some keyword research recently and we were going to do some content on, how to add a strike through in Google Docs. So it's kind of a very basic feature kind of tutorial type article. It tends to be on the shorter end of the spectrum. It's pretty formulaic, that style of content, because it's just like, here's what this is, here's why it's important, and here's how to do it. And so that style of stuff, that kind of content, can be really easily outsourced and handed off without a lot of problems usually. What becomes really challenging is if there's some core concept that you want someone to help you guys develop or flesh out, and you're just starting with a brand new team. That's where it makes more sense. Okay, let's have our internal people still work on that. Another example would also be like bigger kind of one-off projects, where a lot of times those will just zap your resources internally, and it might make a lot more sense. Even if you have the people that could do it, it's probably just kind of cheaper and more effective to have some external team do it. Because when you come back to the hours they're spending on it, what you're paying per hour, it usually ends up being a lot cheaper for an outside team, even though on the surface, an agency or someone else might seem more expensive, if that makes sense. Because most clients, especially most marketing teams, don't do a good job of tracking the amount of hours they're spending, kind of project management, coordination, all that type of stuff that doesn't actually end up in any output.
So you talk about the steps to take, and I love when you said earlier that The problem is that many don't have it written down. And I'm sure that as you said that, there are folks out there listening that thought, that's us. We don't have anything written down. There would be nothing to hand off. And that, again, is not a great foundation to build on because it's not going to be what the client's looking for. So for those out there listening, and also I think we get intimidated by the big, intense style guides that we've seen out there. What kinds of things are important to have written down that have made your job easier externally as a content production resource?
Yeah, definitely. So we'll kind of start broad and get a little more specific. But when we talk about like brand guidelines, again, a lot of times brand guidelines will have logos, they'll have font types, they'll have color choices. So they'll kind of give you like the specific ways to use a logo, for example. None of that stuff usually exists for like written content. Yeah. So there's no like style, for instance. Do you want to have a formal tone overall and come across as an expert? Do you want to have more of a informal kind of snarky attitude? How and where are jokes present, if they are? Do you, even something as simple as when we talk about formal versus informal, it would be like contractions. Do you want me to say cannot or can't? Do you want me to throw in a pop culture reference, or would that be off brand for you guys? So just starting as basic as that is immensely helpful because we have writers that are really good at different styles. And so they both might be subject matter experts in one space, but we need to know which of those writers should we match with the client and why. And a lot of times where you get a mismatch of a writer and any external writer and a client, as long as you did your due diligence and vetting on do they actually know what they're talking about and know the space, it usually just comes down to style. It's that this writer is either too informal for my liking or too formal for my liking. And it's too maybe technical and dry. And we want this to be a little more interesting and kind of consumable and whatever. So usually just as starting as basic as it sounds, just getting that down and then providing concrete examples. So here are advertisements, or here are podcast episodes, or here are pages on our website where we think we did a good job capturing these ideas and concepts. That is like a huge help to get any external team kind of up to speed.
That's great. I love the point about examples too. But I think that's where the intimidation comes from of style guides, is that they often include everything you want to know about how much space and clearance needs to be left visually around the logo, but very little in terms of how this brand is supposed to express itself in the written form. And when you look at everything from articles to even a video with a script, a podcast, it has writing at its core. So definitely need those guide rails. So I want to come full circle back to your bio. You talked about working as a content production company for the best SaaS sites on the planet. And these are usually incredible media platforms, partners, and they're smart marketers. So what I want to look at is what's something that these smart marketers are doing that are maybe best practices that you've seen across some of the best of that those of us listening wanting to up our game could implement?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll try to think of a few. Off the top of my head, it depends too, because it's funny. Some teams are a lot better at certain things than others. But I would say with a lot of the teams we work with, they are very good at like the operations of marketing, if that makes any sense. And so we spend a lot less time talking through these really specific style things, because we all share the same mindset of, as these issues come up, you document them somewhere in a uniform place. We train people on this, and then we kind of follow the same rubric, if that makes any sense. And so we're going to be more focused on how do we construct this workflow that's going to have a dozen or two dozen people involved, and it's, there's going to be transitions from one team to the next. And so it's, in a weird way, even though we're doing a lot of, you know, quote unquote creative marketing, we find ourselves doing a lot of like just classic kind of operations, processes, systems in place, all that kind of stuff. So I think that would be a huge one. Whereas most smaller companies or most companies that aren't as far along in terms of like scale or size, especially when it comes to marketing, are not that far along when it comes to documented processes, systems, all that stuff.
So true. And I think that that's another one of those revelations that it is easy to miss, because we often think the creative stuff is kind of like the logo guidelines. It's stuff that's easy to see. And we assume that people that are doing this better have this better work visually, these more creative concepts. But a lot of times that excellence comes in the form of things that you mentioned: operations, process, workflow.
Brad, yeah, definitely.
Brad, as we start to wrap up, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
I think one of my favorite branding examples that I always go back to is Stone Brewing out of San Diego. One of their biggest beers is called Arrogant Bastard.
Yes.
So that kind of gives you a clue as to what tone they take. But they, if you look at like how much they've also grown in a space that actually is really difficult to grow in craft brewing, they were kind of like one of the first big ones to kind of break out, and they're still growing immensely. And they're one of the only kind of U.S. craft brewers, I think, to have a dedicated place in Germany that they brew beer. And their main brewery, I guess, and restaurant in San Diego. They're also building a hotel because it's also one of the biggest tourist attractions in all of San Diego, which is kind of remarkable when you think about it. So they're one of my favorite examples because the stuff that they do, it's always very consistent, and they're not afraid to polarize people and to turn some people away. But I think that the people who kind of do get it and do enjoy it, it creates that cult like following.
That is a great story. And I feel like, it's Stone Brewing. That's a logo I've seen, and I have had Arrogant Bastard many times in my travels. And it's the beer you order first for the name, but then it turns out it's a pretty good beer. So you get to keep having fun ordering that name.
It is, and it's consistent. So the product, like the beer they make, is aggressive and it's bitter.
Yeah,
and it just everything falls. And I think that's what's really remarkable. Whereas most companies that try to have a bold stance like that don't always kind of follow through. They don't always have like the product or the service attributes to follow in line with that. And so I think they just do a really good job of kind of creating that consistency.
Well, this is better than our potato metaphor, because we can build on this, because to your last point, most would water down both the name and the product. And yeah, definitely standing out. Brad, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
People can go to getcodeless.com is our main site. I personally am on LinkedIn, although I'm not very active. But usually on our website, that's kind of like our main hub. As we talked about earlier, we try to follow our own recommendations, but it's kind of our main hub for new stuff and new content, and then it gets pushed out to all the various places from there. So getcodeless.com is usually the best.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes that folks can find at onbrandpodcast.com. Brad, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.